We will call the 7th of January 2016 meeting to order. Find my agenda. I think I would like to start out with, is it Alexi?
Allie.
Okay. Allie being our new person, we'll go around the table and introduce ourselves. I'll let Pete start.
I'm Pete Dubois, the Solid Waste Mama, I'm the Division Manager.
I'm Kim Carlos, I'm the Federal
Women's
Manager.
Allie
Coker,
what?
I
don't know what to say.
This
is my first meeting.
Ty Stover, Vancouver City Council.
Steve Troy.
John Ebison, SWAC Chairman.
Grim Wilson, SWAC, Southeast Clark County.
Simone O'J, SWAC.
Brandon Vick, Clark County Business, I think.
I'm Steve Willis, and I'm Northern Clark County.
Bill Turtley, it's my last meeting.
My replacement over there, Ty Stover.
Except for he's my alternate. I can't make it.
You better have pretty good attendance. And I know you will.
Yeah, in the city's case, I mean, we've got a rule about attendance. We spent some time on talking about that. A little bit of work on it, but in the case of the city people, if you don't show up, we just add it to the end of your sentence.
We do go out for margaritas afterwards.
Oh. New guy has to buy the first round, by the way.
Hey, we have the minutes from December 3rd meeting.
Seconded.
If all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Abstained.
Okay. Clark County Public Health.
Right here. There's one of them. So Chuck Harmon, I'm a program manager at Clark County Public Health, for those of you who might haven't met yet. And I oversee solid waste, hazardous waste, on-site and water programs over there. The thing I wanted to spend a little time on right now is following up on some of the discussion and email surrounding the Roofner landfill. I think at the last meeting, the City of Vancouver had a representative here who talked about their oversight of work out there under permits. I have conferred with, and at the last meeting and in our email communications, I had been working with our county attorney regarding the consent decree that oversees all of the work around the Roofner landfill. And I'm just looking for the notes I have for that real quick. But basically, after talking to them and with Dr. Melnick, the director and health officer for public health, if you look at section 44 of the consent decree, and I think I forwarded that document on, basically, for the consent decree to be closed, first the owner, 2600 LLC, the person who's doing the filling work, will have to petition the court to terminate. The city will have to provide evidence to the court that all of the work is done to their satisfaction. And finally, the county has sign-off on that. We concur that the work is final and that there's no further action required. And what that constitutes, when you read that paragraph and look at the other references, is that the development permits are complete. Our interpretation of that is that, in fact, all of the waste have been removed, all of the landfill structures have been removed, and that the sites are all filled completely to the grades that are outlined in the permits, which is grade, fully filled and graded to the floodplain level that they're required for the shoreline permit. I am going to draft a letter to the city, because they've asked us, county, what do you need from us before you'll concur and I'm going to outline that to the city, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, so that it's clear between us and the city what we need as a county. And then at the time that all of that work's done and they're ready to, they petition the court and they ask for our concurrence, we'll obviously come to the SWAC before then to let you know that we're prepared to offer that letter and to get your input. And so and part of that will be a review of the material and the city's and the city of Vancouver's letter. So in essence, Don, our interpretation of the consent decree is that all the work has to be done before the county will do our part of the actions to close it.
That's what I was looking for, because when I was out there, they're starting to fill, or it looks like they're starting to fill the lagoon. But the liner is still in place. And part of the thing that concerned me was there's chunks of asphalt, I would say probably 10, 15 dump truck loads of broken up asphalt that's being put in there. And I don't know if that's a valid fill material. There's probably 20 dump truck loads of broken concrete. Now, the concrete I can see. It's a pretty inert material and it's used a lot in fills. I'm surprised you're not breaking it up and recycling it, but okay. So we're moving on to get everything defined so that the next generation or the one after that can know what's going on.
Great. Yeah, I mean, I think this. I mean, this all got rolling again, or kind of opened up again in August when they finished that 19-acre parcel to the north, and then so now that we're kind of re-engaged on it. And talking to the city, we'll just clarify. Here's our understanding, our interpretation of what that county will need before we'll sign a concurrence. And so we'll just get that laid out for them. And then when all that work's done, we'll move to doing that concurrence. But again, right now, their estimates are that all of that work won't be done until around 2017 based on information provided from Brian Carlson.
Okay. Any other questions for Chuck on the working in landfill?
And just quickly, it's up to the jurisdiction who's issuing the fill and grade permit as far as the material and type that they approve as clean fills, whether that be concrete chunks smaller than 12 inches or diameter or whatever the parameters they set for. So it would still fall under the fill and grade permit that we've deferred the solid waste permit to, as to whether or not they're allowed to utilize that material as clean fill for that really great project. So that would be, another question for the City of Vancouver, if that's an approved fill material.
Who would I talk to, Rich?
The Director of Community Environmental or Economic Development, Chad Eichen, or Brian Carlson, Director of Public Works.
Okay, well, I don't do that type of work, so I just had a...
So I'll share what Chuck mentioned to Brian, and then he can kind of go forward from there. And it'll be great to get that clarification on that.
Yeah. I finally closed the loop with the PA earlier this week, so I haven't had a chance to draft the letter. But that'll be the content of it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. What else do you have?
That's really the main thing I was going to cover. I think it's taken more time this year to get our grant settled and get a couple different things with Ecology, with funding issues and their system they're using to administer grants now, this Eagle system. But all that, I think, is addressed now. So we're going to finish our quarterly report. We'll work out some bugs, and then we'll start getting payments.
We weren't able to even add data to the database until December 29th, and I tried to figure out how to get to the part where I actually enter my data, but there's no clear step to get to that point to enter for your progress report. So that's my task for tomorrow. I was focused on the Washougal facility this week, but tomorrow is my task to try to get the third quarter report and then start on the fourth quarter report. So, it's been delays just because we didn't have access to the database until the 29th. Once that's complete, I'll send a copy to Pete, and he can send that out to SWAC as well, if you're interested in kind of our numbers for third quarter and fourth quarter.
Yeah, definitely once that's done, you guys will get a copy of that.
Great.
committee, commission.
Rich?
Nope, no news.
No news. Derek?
I think our big thing is the weather. As we, as everybody knows, we canceled service on Monday on the hauling side of the company. And so we had to delay service to 25,000 customers in Clark County. The basic message there on a one-day delay on a Monday is that we don't shift everything out so that the whole system gets disrupted. Just the Monday customers are impacted. We pick up twice as much for free, essentially, on the following Monday. In the city of Vancouver, we have a lot of, obviously, the every other week recycling system that's going to cause some problems. So those customers will have to wait until not this following Monday, but the Monday after in order to have their service provided. Just because of the sheer size of that program, we can't, and Don won't lend us trucks for that. So we have to delay that just for the manpower and the trucks. We have to delay it until their next service day, which would mean some of those customers, unfortunately, will go 4 weeks until they get their recycling service over the holidays, which is challenging, and nobody wants to hear that, but that's the best we can really do in that situation. The problem being that it's Christmas tree season, so the yard debris trucks that pick up the yard debris service, you know, you gotta pick your poison really on how you're going to use your fleet, and we made a decision along with the city and county that we would delay the service on the recycling until the week after. So, but other than that, we had a two-hour delay on Tuesday, and everything went pretty well in general. No accidents, no injuries, no real complaints other than a few people that are having some issues with the delay. And so we're dealing with those as they come along. I think everything went pretty well in general. So Tanya Gray at the city was kind of a point of contact. Mike Davis is the other one, just protocol-wise. We all get together at 3 o'clock in the morning, which is a fun experience, and make a decision, yay or nay. This time we knew the weather was coming far enough in advance, so we actually talked about it Sunday night and made the decision to cancel service. So we were able to get a call blast out to customers early, let our drivers and employees know as well. So it was nice to get a little head start on it.
And what's the community? Is there a follow-up communication to help people know?
Yeah, so what we'll do, I mean, the last couple of years have been nice with all the technologies available. So we will do a call blast on Sunday night, we think, to customers, just reminding them what's going on. So, you know, you missed your service last week, you can put out twice as much this week. If you, for garbage and for any of the weekly services. And then in that message, we'll have to tier it so that weekly customers get one message. Customers with every other week services like recycling or out in the rural parts of the county, the message is, you know, tomorrow is your normal service day, but recycling is not going to be your day. You have to wait one more week on recycling. So we'll be pretty, try to be as clear as possible on that, because there tends to be a lot of confusion on, you know, well, it's my service day, so I can put everything out, right? Well, no, you have to wait till your normal recycling service day.
Was there a blast this last time?
There was a blast on Sunday, I think it went out Sunday night. It either went out Sunday night or Monday morning, I can't remember for sure. There's been a lot going on since then.
I think they decided to delay, because it takes, from what we understand, it takes like 2 hours for all of them to go out. So
I think we did Monday
morning. If they did it like at 9 o'clock, some people would get a call at 11, so yeah. They said that's too late, so I think they did it Monday morning.
Yeah, the system that we use pulses out the phone calls, and they only allow so many in the queue at a time. On their phone lines, and so we kind of got to depend, you know, weigh on how many. With 25,000, it's hard for us to do it at once. So, but it went. I mean, compared to the old days when we used to do it, it goes a lot smoother nowadays. And the PIOs are great to work with. They really get the message out quickly, and then the call blast, the emails, all the different technology really helps a lot.
Great.
I think that's all we have.
That's it.
That's kind of the big one.
Thank you. Pete, that puts you in the driver's seat.
Well, thanks, Brent, for bringing the coffee.
Sure.
Cookies. And it's great to have the new members. Bill, I'm too sad to see you go, but I know where to find you.
Well, I'm not going to be too far away backing up Ty there, but he's got a pretty good attendance record in school, so I think that'll carry on here.
And good to have the new members. And Derek's from Quays Connections. I don't know if you had a chance to introduce your actual title.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Derek Grant. I'm the district manager for all of our Clark County operations, so the hauling side and the transfer stations.
Mm-hmm. And then Rich. And we'll try to keep our acronyms straight too, because then we start talking that way, so calls out. The first one is CPG, so that's the Coordinated Prevention Grant. And I sent that around to SWAC and our regional partners. The big news here is it's not in your packet, it's just an email. We were from the state for a 2-year grant, we were getting about $1.2 million, and this current grant cycle is for $600,000 and change. So we will be discussing some of the changes we're trying to do at our collection events to save some money, but we're really in a budget tightening.
There was $600,000 was the grant, and it said, if I remember right, like another couple hundred thousand, that was the county's portion?
The county match, yes.
So there's $800,000 versus how much with the county's grant from the last time?
1.8.
Oh, okay.
And just some real quick updates. I know I'm on the agenda later. We have a holiday collection event that's going on, so we can pass these around. Block Foam on January 23rd. Also, IMS is going to be there collecting electronics. We've got old holiday lights, even the reindeers that stopped working. We can turn those into artificial trees.
Metal frame reindeers.
Metal frame reindeers.
Yeah, metal frame.
Yes. Oh, they do.
Yeah. I read them.
And we have a master compost recycler training that will begin on January 28th. That's one of our grant-funded programs. We did have a switch in our way that we're going to manage that program. We're actually going to insource that program. It had been done through Columbia Springs. It will currently be done with our staff, and that's another cost savings measure. So you might hear about that, but we'll run that program just as it's always been run. We've got a morning blend. I know Alan used to come to these. They're for businesses. The next one's going to actually be hosted by Road Connections, so we appreciate that. On January 21st, and that's at 8 a.m., and that's over at East Ridge. A networking opportunity. I sent out the latex paint email that came from Stericycle. Mm-hmm. This is something that this SWAC has been involved with. Bill actually was a good advocate to get the private sector on the ball. And from the basis of that email, it looks very promising that they could actually begin a latex processing operation here at 10th June, which to me seems pretty fast. But I will certainly keep you all posted on that, and that's kind of a success from this team. And we will be directing our paint. Most counties bulk their paint and landfill it. So we are recycling that latex paint, and that's kind of a bright light for this county and the cities. And the final piece I had is we are looking for sponsorships for the Recycled Arts Festival. I'm going to pass these around. There's no obligation here, more just to show you how we've been doing that. And we've been very successful. Waste Connections has been a long-time sponsor of this event. They'll be stepping up this year and then actually into a more presenting sponsor level in the future. We had Umpqua Bank come in at $5,000 to present the kids area for the Recycled Arts Festival. We get our park rental in-kind donation from the City of Vancouver, which is a $2,500. We're still looking for a sculpture garden sponsor, and then we don't have a limit on the $1,000 sponsors, but official investments came in at that level. So we've raised over $12,000 to run this program. It'll be our 11th year, and we have got 25,000 people who come down for the weekend. Great opportunity for SWAC to be involved, a lot of fun, and a big partnership effort.
What weekend's that, Pete? I'm sorry.
It is the third weekend in June.
So moved up the weekend.
I think it's always the third Does it say last weekend in June? Last weekend in June, thank you.
25th and 26th.
It is the last weekend in June.
How many people went to that last year? I thought it was great. It's amazing the amount of stuff that people can do with what you usually think of as junk. They actually made some pretty interesting items out of it.
It was quite interesting, but at the same time that was going on, the Trade Association for the Garbage People in the state of Washington was right next door at the Hilton. So the Washington Refuse and Recycling, for all the spouses that didn't want to go to the meetings, went over there, and then at breaks came back, grabbed their spouses and drug them over, and they surprisingly bought a lot of stuff.
And they thought you did it for them.
Yeah.
They really did it.
That's all I can say.
Yep.
I'm going to go up front. That way you all don't have to turn around to look at me, if that works.
I'll leave it all to Melissa. I have to go to Andy Matt to take care of this. You guys have a good night.
Thanks a lot.
This is Rob Charles. He's a professional engineer for City of Washougal, so he can answer the tough questions, and I'll take the easy ones. Maybe turn off the light. That seems much better to make eye contact this way. My name is Melissa Sutton. I work with Clark County Public Health. I'm an environmental health specialist. I've been in charge of the solid waste program since 2007. And I couldn't self-title myself a solid waste compliance coordinator, but that's just my own fancy name. I've been an environmental health specialist since 2000, so gosh, I'm going on my 16th year of working with public health. In October, we received a solid waste application. I know we have some new members, so I'm not sure if you got the email, but we received an application from the City of Washougal to open a new stormwater recamp facility. So just to kind of explain a little bit, I know you're newer, I don't know if you're familiar with how, did you get any of the paperwork or anything?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So the street sweeping that they do is typically a drier material that the vector waste when they go through the mixing up the sumps and the catch basins, that is a wetter material. So they'll take that to a decant facility, they'll dewater it, and then they will dry that sludge material. They will test it, and then hopefully, if there's no contaminants, then they would be able to utilize it for beneficial use. So that's kind of just a summary. So for those of you who don't know, or maybe it's not in what you do every day, a little summary.
How do they, dewater the material? Is it pressed, or is it?
It drains out.
Just drains out.
Yeah, and it's usually connected to the sewer for the catch basin waste.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah, so they are in these big trucks with a bunch of water, and usually on one side they'll have where the water part, so they'll just kind of crash the lid.
The Vector trucks with the big long hoses on them, mm-hmm. and yeah. up to the catch basin, suck them out, and then move on to the next
one. So they kind of crack the lid a little bit, let all of the super wet, spooky water get out, not dewaters and settles. And then they'll go to a separate site typically and get all of the solids out. So that way it's not just one big blob going in. So,
what are your typical contaminants that you find?
Typically hydrocarbons. And so from Whatley Pit is a currently permitted decant facility. Heavy metals is what they would test for. Carcinogenic polyaromatic hydrocarbons, they call CPAHs as a simplified term. Those typically are the highest, would be your hydrocarbons, but they're volatile organic compounds. So typically with your hydrocarbons, once you have a static pile that's been removed, if you have aeration, a lot of times the hydrocarbons can volatilize, so it's not long-standing concern, But definitely heavy metals is a concern that we would have. Since we don't have lead in our gas anymore, that's less of a concern from a public health standpoint. So in accordance with our Clark County Code, Public Health sent out a copy of the application to various agencies to request feedback and input. So we sent it out to Washington State Department of Ecology, Department of Natural Resources, Labor and Industry, Environmental Services, Southwest Clean Air Agency, City of Washougal, their Planning Department, City of Washougal's Fire Marshal, Clark County Community Development is actually listed as an entity that we're required to notify, although it's not in the county, so they deferred and defaulted back to the city. But really the only comments that were really provided was from an interagency review from Washington State Department of Ecology, and that letter that they provided is included in your packet. It really is kind of more checkmarky things on the application, one of them being that they will need to have the sign off from the fire marshal. The fire marshal's only concern that he provided was a fire hydrant that they're already in the process of implementing. From public health, we've reviewed the plan. The plan itself, so it was all part of a 2014 wastewater treatment plant improvement project, and the facility is being constructed to be more efficient for the city and more cost-effective means of disposal. I think the solid waste permit application part kind of was an afterthought and not really an upfront forethought in their mind. It was kind of a, hey, we have this idea for this project. Sounds great. Let's do it. And then it was like, wait. So the design of the facility and the concept of the facility and the structure itself, I reviewed the plan and consulting with ecology from public health, we would be comfortable issuing a conditional approval so that they could begin construction and that sort of thing. Obviously, we want feedback from SWAC before we provide them our formal comments. But some of the concerns that I have is that the plan as submitted doesn't address Washington Administrative Code 173.350, which is the permitting regulation. And so I'm going to work with Rob and his office to try to incorporate some of that language, making sure that they have really good information in there about their testing, how they test, what they're testing for, what parameters they're looking for, the frequency, how they're going to manage the solid waste, their contingency plans, those kinds of things. And a lot of that is based on my experience with Whatley Pit Decamp Facility. In recent times, they've accumulated more waste, and so really trying to work to avoid those in their new, as we have a new facility, I think it's a good opportunity to have foresight in the event of an emergency. So those are kind of new to Rob. So, but those are the concerns that I have. But the actual facility itself, the concept, the design, the workings, they are going to be at the sewer treatment plant facility, so it's already zoned industrial. It already is, wastewater is already going to be diverted directly to the wastewater treatment plant. I spoke with Dave Knight at Washington State Department of Ecology, and from a wastewater treatment, they don't have any concerns with stormwater or sludge wastewater going to the sewer treatment plant.
Wasn't the treatment plant pretty much set up with this piece in mind?
Well, it's designed to treat this type of contaminants. That's your question.
Now, when they built the facility in the first place, wasn't it, we're going to have this coming along in 8 years or 10 years? Or
when the original plant was laid out, there wasn't a plan for a decamp facility. It was a subsequent stormwater master plan where we identified the need for the decamp facility and co-located it with the treatment plant.
So from from SWAC, one is that you would have the opportunity to review the information and ask questions. If you have any concerns from public health, we definitely want to implement them. Yep.
The amount that you're getting, though, out of this from the Vactor trucks is pretty minor compared to the total flow that's going to be going through the plant, is that correct? The sludge?
Yes.
And that's all going to one place. Then you have to retest the sludge anyway, or the biosolids later on, too, though.
Right, and that's, we can't do anything with it until that's been approved.
Who all can use this facility? It's just Washougal and Camas, or?
Well, at this point, it's just the city of Washougal, and once we get it operational, we'll have a better sense as to how much capacity we have, but I think we're going to be pretty lean on other partners coming in, potentially using it.
The plan as proposed does allow for other entities, whether it be private sector or public sector. It does leave that open. However, they will be limited on the volume that they're able to accept based on the design of the facility.
How much excess capacity are you building in to start with your best estimates of use now?
With the decaf facility?
Yes.
So it's going to carry 6 months, we have 200 to 300 cubic yards of material.
Yeah, so the plan as submitted, it says that on an annual basis, the city in their account for city current operations, projected future growth, and an allowance for outside haulers. So this would be kind of worst case scenario numbers. They would anticipate 1,480 cubic yards per year of Vactor waste and 1,870 cubic yards of street sweeping waste annually. And according to the plan, they would have a maximum on-site storage of 6 months of that material. They would have capacity for, so about 1,500 cubic yards.
Okay. What do you need from us?
I really just wanted this opportunity to let you be involved in the process, to really make it be a transparent process. For in the event that public had comment or concerns, that you would have an opportunity to hear that. We have not received any public comments. And then if you reviewed it and had any concerns, that you would have an opportunity. We haven't had a new solid waste facility in our county in quite some time. The Washougal Transfer Station was our last permitted facility. However, as many of you know, that took about 10 years to get through with everything. And so with Chuck being new to the department, really this is my first new facility, so we're really trying to build a process for this. So really just to be a transparent opportunity, to really have it be a public opportunity, and for you as SWAC members to know about this facility, to support the facility or object to the facility. And for you to have an opportunity to voice that, I feel is very, and Chuck as well, we just feel that having SWAC know about our facilities before they start in the ground and just kind of being part of the whole process, we thought would be a culmination of that. Also, it's required by our Clark County Code before we issue the permit that we have SWAC feedback. So I guess from SWAC, I guess we would be looking for approval to move forward with this project or recommendations, any recommendations you would have or concerns and modifications you would have for the information that was provided.
Mr. Chairman, I'm having some thoughts in here that right now you're kind of building or inventing a wheel. Okay, now. Okay. 10 years or 15 years down there, will there be lessons learned? Will this be in writing somehow, the process by which we'll do this so we don't have to go back and, like I say, reinvent the wheel?
So we do have our current solid waste code, which is Clark County Code 2412. that hasn't been updated in 15 to 20 years. So that is a step we're planning to note. We've been in the process of trying to update. Part of this is in there. So in that code does have, you know, as far as when we receive an application, who we need to give notification to, and SWAC is one of those members and entities.
I was just going to ask to ensure that, that this group is included on all steps of the evolution.
Yeah, and that is in county code. That is in county code, and that's why we are here today, is because it is in county code that we do notify.
I must have missed something, because I thought at the beginning of your presentation you said something about, well, we discovered that we hadn't included you, but now you're telling me that we were part of the process, paperwork-wise, but yet this is a pretty late entry for us to be entering into the conversation, isn't it?
We received the application on October 20th, and we sent it. We notified SWAC on November 7th, which was the first SWAC meeting following our receipt that we had received the application.
Well,
and then we would be submitting it.
We knew about it, but we were not included to any depths that I know of. Maybe I missed part of this along the way.
No, but this is a pretty. The way I've looked at this is they've kept us in the loop. As much as we need to be in the loop, I look back from the time I was in college, and that was a long time ago. I ran vector machines, and we dumped them wherever we could dump them, and we're away from that process now. I mean, sweeper trailings, the vector materials, we're getting a lot better, but I guess the question that I'm hearing from Bill is, or to answer his questions, how many of these do you expect to be doing?
How many new facilities?
Yeah. I mean, the other one, the other pit remains open, correct?
It does, yeah.
Does Camas have one?
They do not at this time.
Does the City of Vancouver or Clark County?
So currently, Whatley Pit Decamp Facility receives vector waste from City of Vancouver, Washington State Department of Transportation, Washougal, and Camas, and also Clark County, all at the Whatley Pit Decamp Facility. So I can't project if other facilities or other entities, you know, someone may want to start a new transfer station or a new incinerator or a new decamp facility or a new any kind of solid waste facility. We just want to make sure that you have. So we're just keeping you in that solid waste process.
The impetus for the genesis for Washougal doing this is because capacity of the current system, financially it works better.
If you look at it, when we were using Whatley, when we swept the street, we fill up the sweeper, we waste 2 man-hours a day running back and forth to Whatley. So this makes us much more efficient in terms of 25% of our day traveling to dump. So it's really a long-term financial, we're going to be more efficient with our streets moving back to waste.
And so, I know nothing. I'm trying to figure out what, where we're going to, what should we be concerned about? You know, what should we as a committee be concerned about in this? It seems like you've got a design that is going to pretty effectively contain the situation. It's not for me to try and figure out Washougal's zoning issues, if they're going to tick off a neighbor.
To be honest, in my review of this facility, there are really no red flags or alarms that oftentimes with a solid waste facility, you get the not in my backyard, you don't want this here, the odors, the smells, the vectors, the rodents, the everything that no neighbor wants. In this particular case, it's zoned industrial. They have a wastewater treatment plant there. We all know that it can't be worse than a wastewater treatment plant as far as odor concerns. You know, vectors are not necessarily a concern in this type of situation either.
What's a vector?
Rodent.
Rats.
Yeah.
You're just a victim of rule writing, that's why you're here.
All of the critters. Pardon?
You're just a victim of rule writing, that's why you're here.
Yes, kind of. I don't have concerns.
Just from a history standpoint, it is a victim of rule writing, but when we tried to issue public health microbe issues to solve this sound equipment, McFarland's wanted to expand their operation, and that required an amendment to their solid waste handling permit, and SWAC was the forum for the public to come out, and they did come out. There was a lot of dust that had been blowing, there were a lot of problems with that, and so a conditional use permit was issued by public health, but they took in a lot of the comments. So in this case, it's a good training one, it's pretty benign. But if someone were to come in with a compost facility or something that wasn't, SWAC would be that place for the public to come. Provide that feedback for public health.
Okay, so you got the wastewater treatment plant. This stuff's going into the treatment process. You take the biosolids eventually. You put it in a hole.
So there's a couple different options based on the quality of that material. If it meets the testing requirements, we can beneficially reuse it.
Where would you do that? Landfill cover?
Oftentimes what we've allowed use of that material would be subgrade, so it would need to have a cap or cover, but in an industrial, non-residential project. So it could be used in a roadway median. It could be used in, burn building for Washington State Department of Transportation is utilizing that material for filling projects. Through Department of Ecology and Public Health, we would review. So they'll have their pile. They'll take samples. So depending on the volume of material, they'll take those analytical data. They'll send that to Public Health. We consult with Department of Ecology and then recommend if the levels are too high, then they could, then typically it gets landfilled. So it would go to a solid waste facility.
There was no public comment on this?
There was no public comment received.
You need a motion of support to continue with the project?
That would be great.
Can I ask one more
question? Yes, certainly can.
You put all this stuff in the pit, and you don't know for sure what the levels are and stuff. Is that got a liner and everything in it?
Well, it's a concrete. It's all concrete.
Okay, so it's not going to be able to go in the groundwater.
No. The liquids are connected to the sewer,
okay.
So nothing's going to leave the facility. It's fully enclosed. I mean, it's got concrete walls, stem walls on it, so nothing can leave the facility.
And their plan is to store the stockpile material while when it's finished drying undercover as well to prevent runoff and leachate, which is something that Whatley Pet Decamp Facility does not have currently.
You're the sewer guy.
Yeah.
Because that stuff can leach into the ground, and I wasn't sure where you were storing it or anything like that. So.
Yeah, it's all concrete. Yeah.
I read the materials you set out, and I had no issues with it. So.
Do I hear a motion to?
So move.
Second. What are we motioning?
A motion.
SWAC thumbs up.
Okay.
That's the official verbiage.
I would say a motion for public health to continue with the permitting process.
Yes.
Been moved and
it's a
second.
Friendly amendment, I like.
Yeah.
I second.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And Derek, thanks for no questions.
multiple tables.
Did you say Watley Pills at capacities?
They had materials that were stockpiled in 2009. The material was poor due to some maintenance. So not due to contaminants you would normally think of. It was a weed control that quarantined the pile.
We like what we see what you're doing.
Subsequently, their public works project refused to accept some material because of this 2009 pile having weeds, noxious weeds. And so then the 2010 pile accumulated, and the 2011 pile accumulated, and it ended up being over 40,000 cubic yards of material accumulating. And so they ended up with too much material that they simply couldn't get rid of all of it. They did end up finding Washington State Patrol was able to use some in a burn building project that they're using as their gun range. Department of Transportation was able to take some for some road projects, and then they took some other material to the Cowles County landfill for final disposal. So their site is finally clean again, and I'm happy. But we've learned a lot of lessons in the last couple of years. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We were fortunate, and I don't know who to blame or say thank you to, of a Survey Monkey, which is a weird term for me, but I had asked after our last meeting in an email to SWAC members of, where do you want to go? What do you want to do when we grow up, and where do we want to be? And Pete and I had talked and said, you know, let's see if we can't really screw this up and both sides be on the same page. And this Survey Monkey came out, and I don't know at whose direction or who formed the questions, but it was rather interesting to me to see this and see a lot of what we had talked about amongst ourselves. The first item, how often should we meet in 16? The majority says monthly. Now, that brings up an issue that you brought up to me of spring break, but
sure. We can pinch it.
We could throw somebody, you know. I made a comment to a friend of mine, well, we'll invite Mr. Benton to come sit in your spot.
Yeah,
right. That'll he'll be in Olympia at that time. So I don't know how far we want to go.
Why would he be up there?
How far we want to go into this. The final numbers, I mean, the next item, should SWAC develop subcommittees? We're split 50-50. Yes? No? I can't take that question and put it in another pile. What do we want to do for outreach programs? There's some of these that I really like. The household hazardous waste one, that's going to kind of be a hot topic, I think. So I guess I'm asking the group, do we want to sit and look at this on our own?
Okay.
Put it on the next agenda conversation? I mean, it amazes me how much we split 50-50. But it also amazes me that how many of these things came up that we've talked about, things that we want to do. Tours. I know Alan is a big fan of tours. That's nice. I think that Ty and I were just talking about that. East end of the transfer station, but not the back door of the transfer station. And it's a good way to learn. So, you want to come back to this at the next meeting?
Mm-hmm. I think
that would be appropriate. If you put that on the agenda,
sure.
I would appreciate that. Brandon, it's a break between topics if you want to scoot.
I got fine.
Okay. Thank you for going into fire.
Right? When I do leave, it's not because I'm mad. I'm going to have to.
Steven.
Was asked to report back on the recycle meeting in Oregon. Rem and I sat together there. So we had a good time. And I just wrote down a bunch of bullets here, and I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time. I thought it was a great presentation. I think they were talking about Tierney and how bad he was and then how good these people were. And it finally got, from my understanding, Rem, you can correct me, is it got more into exactly recycling rather than pointing fingers at everybody, which I thought was good. I didn't realize, Donna told me this, and obviously I didn't believe you. So Oregon has hundreds of years of landfill space. I don't know about Washington, I mean, because it's an Oregon place. But I know California doesn't, where I came from, but so it's really not a pressing thing for trying to save landfill space for recycling, which is very interesting. So it's, but landfills are the third highest methane polluter out of everything, so and methane's not good. So obviously recycling is good. They said cardboard, metal, and paper are 90% of the greenhouse gas benefits that you do. And I know we've had discussions, and Riff brought up, what kind of cardboard can you put in? And I think that's a, you know, like the six-pack you get the beer. You said no, and somebody else was here, and they said yes. And so, I, you know, I take my six-pack of beer thing, and I throw it in a recycle. But whether that's good or not, I don't know. Plastic is energy conserving for recycling, although they're making the plastic bottles now so little.
Yes,
you pick them up and they almost come apart on you. Mm-hmm. So trying to recycle that is not very beneficial. Aluminum is great, and glass is very small. So everybody recycles their glass, I think. It's easy to throw in the oven. But you don't get that much benefit out of recycling the glass. And then the big thing came down, it says China, China, China. China's economy has slowed, and they're not buying as much stuff. And then you see this week, the stock market's going because of China. And so they're not buying stuff. One recycler had to pay, let's see, what was it, $70 a ton to get rid of bales of plastic. So they'd get it, they'd bale it, and they'd pay somebody to take it. And I mean, you don't stay in business doing that. I don't know about waste management here.
Connections.
Waste connections.
Or waste connections, yeah. Sorry about that. but they said plastics number 3 through number 7 on the bottom of the plastic they had to pay to get rid of. And, you know, I worked on this stuff, but I couldn't remember. So, you know, you can look it up on the web what 3 through 7 is. But if that's not doing any good, we may have to rethink over a period of time. If somebody has to pay to get rid of it, I don't know if that's true or not.
Are you having to pay to get rid of it, anything?
We don't pull that material right now because there is no market for it. We would have to essentially dispose of it. Nobody will buy it.
So if you put it in, you throw it away.
Right. There's no reason to pull it out. Okay. It's already going to go to the garbage anyway. So we still have material, that mixed rigid material that's been sitting on the ground for 6 months we've not been able to sell.
And that's what they were saying. They just kind of killing some of these people just trying to get rid of it.
And, you know, to that point, our contract with Clark County and our transfer station, I think we brought this up before, and we've talked to Pete and Don about this. You know, Waste Connections is compensated about just the peculiarities of the contract. We're compensated about $40 a ton for the material that comes in the door. And it costs us $75 a ton to process the material. So we lose $35 a ton on all the recycling that comes in the door from Clark County.
And that's a nationwide problem.
Yeah, I mean,
every
municipality is different the way that they work the pricing, you know, and it comes back to the consumer at the end of the day. But yeah, it is a problem.
So what they're saying is, in the future, it looks like recycling is going to cost more money. I mean, we're not recycling.
Unless, I mean, this is the discussion to possibly rethink and make sure we're preparing for that question.
Well, I think, and Simone, it was your article that said that we need to look at what we are going to take.
Yes.
I mean, so if we're taking 30%.
We put this in there. I think it's in everyone's.
Yeah.
So this is what currently can go in. And then we just prepared this very quickly. I think this is in your packet as well, which looks at it a little more from an economic breakdown. So if we're telling folks to put in things that have no value, then that's something that should be considered. And if those things that go in that have no value increase our processing costs.
Well, some things are going to have no value. Some things you put in your recycle.
And then if you start telling people to put in all of these things, you start getting jumped as well.
Well, I mean, that's what we ended up with when we went to the blue carts. Mm-hmm. We got a whole lot more materials than we went through education phases and are going through that again.
And we have the opportunity of our plans to visit another 20% of blue carts this spring. And if we want, and we consider each one of those a pilot, so if we wanted to message what we do want in those carts rather than what we should put in, we have those opportunities, and we're looking up some of those marketing angles to bring the swag. Clearly, we want folks to put the aluminum cans in.
Right. And Stephen, I'm sorry, I did bring my notes with me.
Pardon me?
I left my notes at my office, but just backing up on the methane gas, do you remember we were talking about that if you can burn the methane at the landfill?
You'd get like 80% benefit or something.
Yeah,
like
there's, yeah, it's when it leaks out of the landfill, when it isn't burned, is when it's just like exponentially.
Right.
And greenhouse
gases. Methane is like 20% worse, or 21 times worse than carbon dioxide. So it's not good. That's what the problem is down in Southern California right now, all that methane that's coming
just
out.
Leaking, yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
And the bulk of the Clark County material does go to Finley Butte's landfill. Some of it goes to Wasco. Anything out of the Washoulery goes to Wasco, but Finley does have a fully contained gas burning system that produces electricity and dries onions next door.
That's cool.
So what are the investments in the sorting technology? So one of the points in the article that I found interesting was, that I emailed to you guys, was that people put it in the blue bin and they think that's it. You know, obviously there's a stream and it goes through a process. And some of the municipalities and companies are investing in pretty amazing high technology to get that sorting more efficient. Mm-hmm. And effective, so that the product that they do end up with is that the higher value. So, is that happening?
Well, again, I think that would be in the planning horizon. It currently is not happening, but this would be a forum to begin that discussion.
Thank you.
So, moving right along, it kind of gets what you're saying, so it's a big problem is recycled contamination. We know that. We go through the bins and everything like that. And they said there's three types of people. And like Alan and the kids that he said last month, if they know what they're supposed to put in and what they're not supposed to put in. And then there's probably 80% of the people, me included, that say, gee, if it's got a number on it, I'm going to put it in the recycle. And that's not good because it's... And I think most people do that. I mean, I try to talk to my wife. She's asked me, if it's go in or not. And I go through this big sheet of paper, and I say, geez, I don't know. But so they said, when in doubt, leave it out. That's what they're saying. If you don't know it goes in there, don't put it in. And I thought, you know, that's... And then there's people that just say, heck with it. We don't like government telling us what to do and everything. We're going to just throw, if we have extra garbage, we're going to put it in the car and let them worry about it. Which is really makes a mess, and they don't care. So there's people that do that. Recycle market is not optimistic. China exported more aluminum, so they're exporting aluminum, not taking it. They export cheap steel. Strong dollars screwing things up. Plastic prices, they say, will continue to deteriorate. The 10-year prediction, it says demand will be less for recycled products in the past, it's going to cost more to recycle. So it's not optimistic on the recycling. My comments, I think we got to look at ways, and I'm not sure how the contracts read or anything, but how to contract it so we don't drive. I mean, if they say 10 years, it's going to keep deteriorating. We want to be able to get rid of our recycled material, and we don't want to drive the people that are taking the recycled material out of business. And we need a simpler way to recycle. And, you know, like I said, this great big thing, to me, I'd really like to see like an 8.5 by 11 say, this is what we take, period. And if it's not on there,
this is where I would like SWAC to help.
Yeah, because you go through that, and I know a lot of work went into that. San Jose had the same thing like that, and you get tired after a while of going through the pages and stuff.
I think we can come up with something new.
Right.
I don't know what it is, but...
Well, we don't have a choice, and if we're going to have to come up with something.
Right. But it's got to be simple that people can understand that the 80% don't say, well, I don't know if this goes in or not. You say, you put number one and number two and number three in, or number one and number two and don't put anything else in.
We will try to get new options for the new look for this by the next SWAC.
Yeah. So that's really all I've got, Rem. I don't know if you...
No, I think you covered it pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah, if you pull something off the street and gave them that for 5 minutes and then told them what goes in the cart...
It's too much information.
Too much information.
Well, it also begs... So... I know not to throw my coffee cup in recycling, but I always take my insulator off and recycle it, but this has the insulator on the coffee cup going into the garbage. And which is good.
That's coming out in your next campaign, Ty.
Of course, yeah. It's a West Ramp issue, right?
Oh, I see, yeah.
You know, I'm not sure on the cup cozy. I'm not real sure. You know, I think that's like cardboard.
I'd throw it in, but then...
But part of the issue with that is the small size.
If he doesn't know, you're asking the customers.
Well, what I do...
Here's what happens. It goes to the sort line, and it probably winds up in the mixed waste pile. So yeah. It probably gets recycled and gets bundled in with everything else. It's kind of a scrap paper material that gets sold to China, and China really just...
If China's taking it. Yeah.
The other reality of things is, once it goes out of our borders, yeah, we recycle it, right? We don't really know what happens over in China. They may or may not use all that material. We get credit for recycling it, but I couldn't tell you what they really do use and don't use and what they landfill.
We've all heard the horror stories, though.
Yeah. So, but it would probably, that cozy would probably go in our mixed waste pile. Fail.
So if you use an independent coffee stand, and I started doing this, I'd save them up and take them back. They cost almost, I think she told me, 4 cents for one of those. And, I mean, they're new. They just came off the cup. You know, they're clean. And they recycle the coffee shop I stop at. They just say, wow, thanks.
Yeah. I take my cup, and I don't have one.
Yeah.
Smarter yet. Smarter yet.
Yeah. That's all I got.
One suggestion I'd make is, my assumption is that there's other municipalities that have struggled with coming up with clear guidelines and materials to support that for their customers. So to the extent you're a member of their national or regional organization and can quiz them and say, can you send us samples of your materials that you found effective? There may be somebody that's already figured this out.
We will check, but as Stephen mentioned, and I know I've traveled and then I stay there, they just seem to always be a lot of information.
Yep.
So I haven't seen it yet, but we will look.
All right, because I mean, I know there's some national organizations that they may have inquiries to, you know, poll their members and look for materials.
Yes.
I don't know if it's something that can stay with the cart, because like asking me to find a paper in my garage is not going to happen. But like, I don't know, maybe Waste Connections have a problem with this. I don't know, but if there's like maybe like a sticker inside the lid or.
Well, there's an in-molded label on every cart, which is probably worn out by now because most of the carts are 5 or 6 years old. Yeah. And it is on the cart. We can certainly look at, you know, a program to provide new stickering to those.
Yeah, I just wonder if it could stay with the cart. Mm-hmm. If you easier to reference. Anyway.
You know what there needs to be is an app. You should have your camera on your phone, take a picture of the item, like your little clamshell, because I'm always telling you, don't put them in the garbage because they don't take them. And then it would ping and say, you know, like a red check for no and a green check. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Sorry, I digress.
Well, there is an app. Recycle Right, the Recycle Right app.
That's what I just thought, but it would be great if it were interactive.
Is there like a social media-sized version of the holiday cleanup ad?
Mm-hmm. My Green Neighbors has, do you want it electronic or?
Yeah, I would just think it would be cool if something we could share on Facebook and Twitter.
I shared it on Facebook in the Green Neighbors newsletter.
Cool. Never mind.
Okay.
Adios.
Good luck at Olympia.
Thank you, sir. We're going to need it.
Okay, great discussion. Great beginning discussion. Thank you both for attending. It was at Nick Miniman's. So good.
Yeah. We stuck away and had our own lunch, but yeah.
No, he bought. Thank you.
Oh yeah.
How much of a problem is with dirty recyclables for us? People don't rinse out their whatever before they throw it away.
That's China's problem.
That's where the green fence came from, right?
But if China doesn't take it, then it's our problem.
Yeah, that's again, that comes down to the once it leaves our shores, we don't really know what happens with it. But we would, most of our sorters don't base what they're pulling on, you know, that machine's moving so fast that they aren't looking at cleanliness necessarily as much as they are material type. They see that type of plastic, they're going to pull it. It can impact the price we get maybe for the material if we get a bit of a reputation for having a low quality material.
Yeah.
That's generally not the case. The material coming out of Clark County is of a very high grade actually. We get higher marks for the material coming out of Clark County.
Okay. Are there about 25 folks on that sort line?
Yeah. Two shifts of 25.
8 hour shift. So they've got 25 folks up there pulling. Mm-hmm. I don't know if having fewer commodities could minimize the numbers.
It could. I mean, you know, the one thing I always have a problem with is, you know, the business side of it is the economics of things don't always work. So we don't pull mixed plastics. But really, you know, personally, I believe we should be pulling all that material and just figure out a way to make it work. Unfortunately, we're locked into long-term contracts that are flawed in enough way that it's, you know, not economically beneficial for Waste Connections to pull that type of material. Now, if I personally owned a transfer station and was Bill Gates with lots of money, I would probably try and pull it and find a way to get rid of it in a recyclable manner. Because somebody will probably take those mixed rigids. It's just a matter of us finding that person, being able to stockpile them for long periods of time. Melissa being okay with the fact that we're storing, you know, potentially health hazardous material outside in the rain, you know, the Northwest for 6 months while we find a home for it. So all those things kind of play into it. But they do ultimately have a home. It just may cost, you know, may cost us $100 a ton to get rid of it versus landfilling it at, you know, something much less. So it's the right thing to do. And does the consumer want to pay for it? We've greenwashed people so much that they believe recycling should be free and cheap. And so if we were to put garbage at its true rate, which is close to garbage in price, would people want to pay for recycling? They don't want to pay for organics or food waste if it's close to garbage. They won't do that. So I bet recycling would be the exact same thing. But that's where we're headed right now.
Can I interject one question here? I'm hearing rumors that tip fees may be going up substantially in the next 3 to 5 years. Have you heard any rumors like that?
Tip fees at the
transport? What one we had to take it to landfills?
So the DEQ in Oregon has, so our the landfill we take our material to in Finley Buttes in, out in Boardman, Oregon, the DEQ has raised their fees by
65 cents.
Yeah, it's like a tiered program, so it's going to raise like 35 cents at one point. Essentially for the full year, it'll be about 60 cents next year. And it has not raised from $20 for ever. I mean, it's been since the inception of that contract. And so this is the first increase we've seen. They're purely the fund DEQ programs. Yeah. And so where it goes from there, I don't know.
Is it about $87 a ton?
At the transfer station, yeah. So.
You're up.
Okay. Well, I'll be brief here, and then we can get in hazardous waste. We've got a 2015 SWEO solid waste environmental outreach accomplishments.
Two copies of it.
I do think it's important to celebrate our successes. We're always moving forward to the next goal. So I just wanted to go through a couple of things that we did accomplish in 2015. On the first page, we have 47 schools certified under our Green Schools program. That's out of about 100. And Allie, I think your school certified one of those. So thank you for part of that. We are number one in the state for certified green schools, which is exciting. On the green business front, we currently have 53 businesses. We put on an annual showcase, and we're now doing monthly morning blends, again, trying to build up that green business culture. Green Neighbors, we talked a little bit about the Recycled Arts Festival, RAF. This year, we've raised over $12,000 in cash, close to $15,000 when you add in kind. So we're really looking forward to another big event. We put on Recycling Day events, which we'll talk about next, where we've collected a lot of material from about 4,000 participants, and those are the hard-to-recycle items, so we go out to the regional cities. Our Clean Cart campaigns, what I talked about, that's when we go out to the actual blue carts around the county. We visited 14,000 of those and tagged them mostly to let folks know not to put the plastic bags in, to a lesser extent, clamshells. We also exposed multifamily units to messages, filled out a bunch of postcards, put out some decals, delivered some bags, you know, trying to clean up that waste stream, recycling stream. And we did show good results. We reduced our plastic bag contamination. And ran a natural garden tour. We're working on our social media presence. We formed our regional solid waste steering committee, which is all of our regional partners. Our paint take back program from 7 paint stores served about 1,500 participants. And we're master planning the Leichner landfill, which you guys have been part of. We're hoping to get that sold. And negotiated yard debris rates. And then finally, we actually restructured our whole division, so it was a big year in that sense. Those restructurings are going to save us over $100,000 a year, every year, so there's good cost savings there. We had our solid waste management plan adopted, and that's a 5-year plan. Our interlocal agreements were signed. We're still working with the City of Vancouver. We've got to the end of 2016. I'll talk about that briefly. And then we secured our grant funding, and we created a strategic plan. So the next handout, which has the objectives and goals and priorities, is just taken from our strategic plan, and I thought this would be probably a quick way just to show you where we're headed for 2016. And I don't know if SWAC is interested in having a goal or goals, but I think that would also be something this group could consider. I'm a goal-oriented person. We've got some larger division goals, which are broad. And then when we get down to our operations goals, we are looking at expanding the central transfer station, which is the one off Highway 503. We've got some traffic and congestion issues there, so we'll be studying that, and we'll be certainly keeping you posted on that. As I mentioned, the Leichner campus, the 30 acres there, we want to get to the market and sold by the end of the year. And we'll be conducting a waste stream analysis, and this is part of our contract where we go in and study the garbage that folks bring in from all different sources. We are, as I mentioned, going to execute our interlocal agreement, hopefully, by the end of 2016 in the city of Vancouver, and maintain our data. On our green schools, we want to go from 74 to 80 by the end of the school year, and have them all moving through, and have at least 33% of those at silver or above. We also have grant funding to go out to 15 schools and do comprehensive waste audits and set up programs on how to get them to reduce waste. And on the other side, we want to bring 25 new businesses through our green program, retain all the certified businesses, and then have our annual showcase of over 150 people. And that'll be at the artillery barracks in March. So we'll be inviting you all to that too.
Peter, when I read this, you added a word here that I think is important, is certified 25 new businesses in there.
Yes. Thank you. And this is draft, so feedback is welcome. And then on the Green Neighbors, we've got about 6,000 folks that we currently send out our blast. You had mentioned the Green Neighbors newsletter. We want to get 500 new signups. The city has started with a company, WeCollect, the app that you can go in and type in what your material is, and it tells you if they can be recycled. If you've got questions like on a TV, how to get rid of it, it will tell you. It also will send you reminders on when to put out the trash, which I think is very helpful. And you can set when you want to be notified, the day before, week before, so you will never forget to put out your trash. And recycling is challenging too sometimes. It's every other week. Again, we want to reach 20% of the blue carts, and that's an opportunity for, as we discussed, the messaging. Raise the money for the Recycled Arts Festival. We are going to put on a Recycle Day event and the holiday event you saw. We're also going to be doing a Waste Busters Challenge, which I'll talk to you about next month.
What is that? Waste Busters Challenge.
It's more of a 21-day form of habit online campaign.
Is that like O-Power, sort of?
It is similar. You pick one of three things. Have a leftover day every week so you don't have food waste. Bring a bag to the grocery store, kind of basic stuff. Try to do the social marketing. And then our master composters, we'll be training 25 new master composters, and they also give back 40 hours per volunteer, so we want to tap them in. And then we want to increase our social media, get our press releases covered, reach more diverse audiences, have a consistent professional image, and this last one really leads into the discussion for the rest of the evening, which was to successfully transition our household hazardous waste, paints, pesticides, and chemicals from these mobile events that we put out in the different cities and town, and shift those to our fixed facilities, which are the three transfer stations, which operate, two of them operate 2 days a week and once on Saturday. So that's where we're headed. Going with the draft and appreciate the feedback.
Plastic bags is a big deal, obviously. But why is it not politically expedient, say in Clark County or Vancouver, a lot of places have done, they don't allow plastic bags when you go to the grocery store? And I'm just curious.
The current thinking, and Rich has been the advocate on this one too, is to first work with the grocers in a partnership effort to see if we can get those things recycled and take them back. So all the Safeways are on board in the cities and the county. So they've got new signage. They're encouraging the public to bring them back. We've got a campaign we're working with schools. I think we've got 15 schools signed up to start to educate those kids to collect those bags. And it's more than the bags, because you've got the wrap around the toilet paper, you've got the granola bags, cereal bags. It really starts to build up when you start collecting that material. So again, I think some of the ones that have banned it are definitely more maritime, and see the stuff washing up. And Rich, you want to add? I know you've tracked this very closely.
Yeah, and it looks like, I know like in Portland when they had their bag ban, we talked to one of the processing facilities, and that cut the amount of plastic film coming into their MRF by only a third. So there's a lot more plastic wrap in the recycling stream, waste stream. Our main challenge was is it going to the transfer station and the processing line where it jams up the equipment. So we're really focused on trying to get all of that film material out of the recycling carts. It seems like a better option if you have that sort of stuff and everybody has some of it to take it back to the grocery store where it has a good market value of an integrated system that gets it back to the market in Nevada and a healthy price to make it into Drex lumber. So we'd rather see that as an option if you've got that stuff. We always say it's better not to take a plastic bag if you don't need it. Use your own, you know. Costco doesn't give out plastic bags, and you can take a reusable bag. I mean, there's a lot of options to plastic bags. Paper bags do have an impact as well, so you know, fewer bags you use, the better. But if you do get a bag, you use it, reuse it to pick up after your pets, recycle it, make sure it's dry and clean, and do that through the retail, not through the cart.
But is that driven politically, or is that just you made that decision?
I mean, that's a decision that our city council, we did a presentation with them, and we said, let's see what we can do to recycle more of this and get it out of the carts before we look at a ban.
What's been the results? What is the tonnage?
We'll be getting a report back from the RAP program folks that work with 12 Safeways around the county. I believe the initial report, I haven't seen the report yet, but it should be coming out soon. I believe they said that the increase in the volume of material was 125% increase, so more than double. I'm not sure that they saw a huge expansion in the types of materials. I mean, a lot of our push was to do beyond the bag, look at other things, bubble wrap and your newspaper sleeve and lots of other bread bags and Ziploc bags. So I'm not sure we saw as much increase in that, but that's another challenge to communicate that. What else can go there? And another piece, if you have a good retail system that's recycling that stuff, and then you tell the stores, we're not going to let you have plastic bags, they may not support that return to retail piece, so then it comes back to the carts or ends up in the landfill. So we'd rather see it recycled. It has a good value if it's clean and dry. And again, my personal preference is, hey, it's personal choice. If I need a plastic bag, it's there. But do I have to have somebody telling me that I can't have it, I can't be trusted with it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the right thing to do with it. So that's personal preference. But
it's a great litter bag, though, for the cat.
Yeah. So while the official program is with Safeway, all the same person is, or the same company is buying the material from all the grocery stores. So my understanding is it's fine to take it back to Fred Meyer. It's fine to take it to any grocery store that collects plastic. You can return it to, not just Safeway.
Yeah, there may be one or two chains that aren't going to Trex, because they're in market. I think Walmart and one other one I can't remember. But I know that all the Kroger stores, UFC, Fred Meyer, Safeway, Albertsons.
Well, so it's not just Safeway?
QFC.
But there's special things? You can take it to any store?
You can take it to any of those stores that accept plastic bags. Yeah, and we've heard from the new manager of the grocery outlet in Vancouver is interested in adding that as something they do.
One of the challenges is you have to provide a baled material for Trex, and so it has to be a large enough store that they have a baler and they can bale it for Trex.
And the advantages in the retail stores is, particularly the ones that have a large distribution center, they bring out materials to the store, and then the store puts in their old pallets and their cardboard and their plastic film and goes back to the distribution center. So there you're getting material from 30 or 40 stores all coming together, and there they can bale it and ship it back to Trex, which is the main route, and that's why retail is so good. Going to the transfer station or a small generator that has a small amount, it does make it difficult to recycle from them.
Good question.
Household hazardous waste.
Okay, household hazardous waste. Everyone should have a white paper, and let's just go right to page 3, where we kind of dive into the numbers. And we have run what are called recycling day events. We do about 8 of them. We do them in all the cities, the center, Richfield, Camas, Washington, Grapple, a couple in Vancouver, and Battleground. And they started out just being collection for paints, chemicals, household hazardous waste. The intent was to, way back when we started these, our fixed facilities came on board and we wanted to let folks clear out their inventory. And they've just continued on because we've had good grant funding, we have staffing level to run these, and so with the cuts in the grants, the reorganization of our division, we've really been thinking about different ways of providing the service. And the cost per person to bring these to these events is close to $80. And that's because the truck's got to go out there, they've got to roll out the blue tarp, they've got to pay the people in the white tied-up suits, people come in the line, it's often a long line, and all this stuff is collected, brought back, and processed.
Can I ask, you said $80 per person that's participating in the recycling?
$80 per person that brings hazardous waste.
Really?
Yeah, it's a hugely expensive.
Wow. Okay.
Now we have, and if you've been in other communities, we've got a state-of-the-art system. We have, if we want to expand collection days. You know, at West Van, you can bring in any Friday or Saturday. At Central Transfer on 503, any Saturday or Sunday. And then in Washougal, the third Saturday of every month. You can bring in household hazardous waste. They are ready and willing to accept. They're there all day. And there's no cost to the customer. We're working with Waste Connections to add a Friday to Central Transfer Station to have some convenience during the week. And we have grant funds to do that, which would cost us not that much money in regards to this.
Is that set up cheaper than, is it $80 for, like when I drive through the centers, there's a great system, it's quick, you drive through and there's people in the white Tyvek suits and there's different stations.
That's
the $80.
That's $80.
But not $80 when you go to the transfer station.
Right.
When you go to the transfer station, it's $50.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Okay.
$54.
Okay.
And again, we would like to have those costs come down. If you look at the next page, page 4, again, 74% of that material coming in is paint. And if we get this paint care legislation passed, which is our goal, there will be, when you go to buy that gallon of paint, you pay a premium, that money then goes to pay. So we don't have those costs anymore.
Right.
So getting that out of the transfer station, fixed facility, we're getting things to the right place, paint store or the transfer station, and then those will be funded by the state, when the state passes that. And we're weaning ourselves off this very, very costly system.
It's crazy.
And really that, those are the two issues. You know, there's some minor issues of safety, staffing up, traffic congestion, that really what we would like to focus on are those hard to recycle items that don't cost us that much money. Block foam, electronics, appliances, scrap metal, basically all the other items that we've been doing in the past. And minus the household hazardous waste. So we are looking, we know that there will be some people that will come with hazardous waste. We are going to message clearly all of our avenues through the utility bills, working with the regional, local jurisdictions, social media, advertising. And then we will be prepared to be on hand because the event's on Saturday. So there's always going to be a transfer station open where they can take it for free. It'll be an inconvenience, but we are working on something to alleviate the pain. Maybe we give them a voucher, they bring that in. They get entered into a prize drawing and they can win something. And that gives us accurate numbers of how many of those people properly, you know, and they can do it during the whole month. So that's our plan for mitigation. Mm-hmm. Ideally, we don't want folks to come at all with hazardous waste, and that would be the message that we're proposing. If they do show up, we will be there to educate and mitigate.
Do you think pink gear is going to be reintroduced at this session?
I know someone who will be reintroducing.
We have an in. We should be.
Yeah. We got in here and then Don.
Is he on board with that?
Yes, he sent a letter to Senator Erickson, it hasn't come out of his committee, the Resource Conservation Committee. And mostly it has to do with cost, also some of where the money goes to administer the program, and maybe other reasons, but they can be overcome, is my hope. And worst case scenario, if we go down this road and we still need to cut costs, we can bulk and dispose of the paint.
Well, what's the timeline for Stericycles?
It sounded like June on that email I sent you.
Okay.
So.
So what's the timeline of this? I mean, obviously it depends.
We need SWAC to weigh in because we will need to begin notifying. Our first recycle day event starts in April. And they run through the year.
But if they can't take the paint in April, then what?
We're redirecting them. They don't bring it to our event. They bring it to the transfer station or the paint store.
But that's going to piss a lot of people off. If you don't get the party, going to get the thing that I didn't understand was it says to shift to the paint, a thorough and comprehensive outreach campaign is necessary. What? How are you going to do that? If I went, I'm used to doing that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get educated if I don't do that.
The smaller jurisdictions, the center, Richfield, Camas, Washougal, we will actually do direct mailing to each citizen in that residence, plus they have utility bills, which hopefully they get ready. Again, We anticipate probably 20% won't get the message and will show up.
Is there going to be a postcard or something? Because I read one of these things. They said every county resident or something is going to get a postcard.
That's on our
That's not this.
Yeah. That's not this.
Well, it's a cost savings that we need to address.
Yeah, well, I agree.
It's a price tag of over $100,000 just to run eight of the, I don't know how you put it, on the blue tarp and the blue lines and the white dots.
Yeah, it was great.
It's great, but cost a lot of money.
Yeah, wow. I had no idea it was that much, though.
So, Pete, what you're proposing is alternatively to add an additional day at the central transfer station on Fridays.
That is correct.
And $100,000 essentially pays for that for a year?
That would probably cost, we did a back of the envelope. Anyway, I think it was.
Well, there's two pieces to it. There's the labor cost of adding the day, and then there is the additional disposal cost incurred by Waste Connections that has yet to be ferreted out. So is the $100,000 the differential between 50 and 80, or is $100,000 just the county savings at $80 a ton, or $80 per person?
And the events for the hazardous waste are between $10,000 and $15,000
per event.
To pay Stericycle.
Yeah.
So that's how you get to $100,000.
But we're still in discussions on how it's going to look in the end. But waste connections, so the way the contract's set up, there's kind of the intent to the original contract. The intent to the original contract is that we would man Saturday and Sunday shifts, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in different variations.
And this would be a change of scope for you?
Correct.
Yeah.
So I don't know, it's, so I want to be careful about the $100,000 number, because until paint care comes online...
That's gross savings.
Yeah. Until paint care comes online, I don't know if it's going to be a true $100,000.
Well, what I'm hearing you say, maybe it's wrong, is you haven't costed it out yet.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, we did, and it was significantly less.
For the labor, yeah, for the labor. Okay.
What's magic about Friday?
It is not magic. And it could be Wednesday, it could be Monday.
Well, I guess the core of my question is, do you have any, I mean, you probably haven't done it, but any analysis of here's when it would be more convenient for people using the transfer station as their household hazardous waste site? People know that it's already available Saturday and Sunday. It's been there for a while. People that know about it use it. I'm there on Saturday and Sunday, and, you know, there's a line, and it's great. But that transfer station is open, what, 8 or 9 o'clock at night?
There's different summer and winter hours.
Yeah, but it's
6
open.
O'clock. Generally 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock,
yeah.
Okay, all right. So I'm just thinking, like, what would be a convenient time? For instance, instead of 8 hours on Friday, you could do 2 hours from 4 to 6 Monday through Friday. Or Monday through Tuesday through Friday, and spread your 8 hours that way. And I don't know what people would prefer. If you're going to allocate those things. And then, of course, another thing to think of is, why stick at 8 hours? Why, you could add more hours and then somehow incorporate a fee to pay for adding more hours.
That has been discussed. That would need to come through SWAC. We could...
I assume that everybody in the system is a potential generator of HHW that needs to be handled. And there's, I don't know how many thousands of customers there are. I'm just going to pick a number out of the sky, 25 cents a piece, to fund the expansion of the program.
Do you recall how many come through on a typical weekend? It's about 200 people come through, I think. So there, it's not an overwhelming number of people coming through. So if you...
It may not, and I don't have any data. You know, and this should be a data-driven decision.
Yeah, but even a nominal fee, I mean, $2, $3, it's still cheap to get rid of it.
Oh.
You know,
You're talking about, like, pay as you go as you walk in the door?
Yeah.
As opposed to letting the system pay for it?
Yeah.
By assessing
user, if you've got 45 gallons or 4,500 pounds that you've accumulated over a lifetime, you should pay for it. I mean, you did it, you accumulated it. It's really a neat deal now, because you go in and it's free.
Well, no, it's not free. It's without charge.
Well,
no, seriously, that's an important distinction.
You're correct. You're absolutely correct. There's not a fee to it.
Right.
But I'm saying, for at least from my perspective, $3 or $4 to get rid of it.
Sure.
I don't generate that much of it, even in a year, to worry about $2 or $3.
Yeah, once you get rid of the stockpile.
Once you get rid of the stockpile, but...
And the paint will be free if and when paint care comes.
Yeah.
And that's 75%.
So I don't know that you're the standard consumer, and I'd be very concerned. I want to know, if it's $3, how much more paint ends up going in the garbage can. Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why most HHW programs are without charge,
yes.
And it's built into the tip fee, and that's
it's
because
designed,
most people don't want to pay for it.
And it's designed to incentivize people to put it in the right place.
Yeah.
That's why it's without charge. But it's not free, but it's without charge.
But to answer your question, the easiest way to do latex paint, take the lid off of it, let it dry out. Then you can throw it in your garbage can. It's not a hazardous material.
Yep.
But we were talking about reusing the materials. We're talking about you've got half gallon left, what can be done with it, rather than just air dry it and toss it. Let's look at reuse.
Did the recycle store start taking things?
Yes, they were one of our 7 points stores that did it.
Pete, how soon do you need a decision on this to make this effective? Because you've got events coming up in March?
April.
April.
And then we also want to promote at the same time the expanded hours.
Okay. So what's your timeline? Do you get a decision today or can we decide next month?
No, next month is fine.
So my suggestion is, and I intentionally threw out some additional ideas for us to think about. You may think they're not good ideas, but what I would hope it would promote is let's collect some data and then consider alternatives and have a thoughtful discussion next week, next month on this issue. I don't know that we have to decide today.
Go ahead and finish your thought.
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to interject kind of on your thought of a couple hours every day. As the regulator and inspector, I've done several inspections, and Derek can vouch for it, but at CTR, when the folks who are running the recycling facility, and they take a break to go to the restroom or take lunch, people leave their HHW there.
Unsupervised.
Unsupervised. Like a drop in ditch. And it does end up on the tip floor. We do encourage them to continue to pull when they see materials that shouldn't be on the tip floor and separate that. Having someone from Stericycle or really a trained professional who knows how to segregate, there are oftentimes where you have an unknown, and to make sure that that's handled properly and taken to the moderate risk waste portion of the facility rather than staying on the tip floor, I think is, from a safety standpoint, from a public health standpoint, especially when you have both commercial and residential consumers on the same tip floor if there were an emergency. I have a 4-year degree, I've taken chemistry, I've taken organic chemistry. I can't always look at a bottle and be like, oh yeah, that's going to be an oxidizer, that's going to be a poison, that's going to be corrosive, that's just...
Right.
I can't do that after 4 years of college, and yes, they do get training, and there's a new training schedule, and they have designated bins now, so it should be better, but I think having someone there to handle that waste stream on a more regular basis, I think is a good concept, or even midweek, so that way the materials that come in Monday, Tuesday can be processed Wednesday, and those that come in Thursday, Friday can be processed Saturday. As it is now, they get Monday through Friday material that's been accumulating all week. Then those Stericycle folks show up on Saturday, have to sort all of this week-long material that's accumulated, and they have cars coming
in. Yeah.
So from, you know, as SWAC and you're considering these things, yes, it costs more, and I recognize the expense of that, and that's not... The expense part isn't part of public health or their permit, but as SWAC members and overseeing for the benefit of the community, making sure that this is processed timely and that it's stored appropriately and that it's handled by trained staff, I think is very important for you to consider as a committee. So that's kind of my 2 cents on this subject.
Good.
Put it on the agenda for the next meeting.
Yeah. And to the extent you can come back with like
data
to help frame the discussion and so we can make wise choices, all that's helpful.
Yeah. So the data would be the costs to run a day or split hours. People coming in.
And yes, and some metrics on here's how much traffic we get now.
Yeah.
You know, that's just kind of helpful to understand. And it's We probably don't, I doubt we have the ability to survey people and say, gee, if we open this program up, what would be hours that you would like? I mean, it'd be great to know that, but I don't know how we would collect that in a timely sort of way.
Sure. Yeah. Great.
Or maybe it could be staggered Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We have lunchtime hours. Tuesday, Thursday, we have evening hours.
Yeah.
Or morning hours.
And what I'd also say is we could think about doing something as a pilot.
Yes.
We could set up some hours, run it for some period of time, mm-hmm. collect some data, like it's getting used, not getting used, and then say, these hours work, these hours don't. And we could pick different hours, different days of the week. Because, I mean, some people got, during the week, time to go do stuff. And some people, it's just weekends. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
Just some ideas to chew on.
But I think we are... Our intent is to shift folks to those transfer stations, so we certainly want to look at the data. We want to consider the best hours, but it would be good from the SWAC standpoint, if not tonight, next month, to give us direction, recommendations.
Well, for me, I'm comfortable ceasing to collect them at events. I don't have any problem with that, and push the savings other directions. But what I want to talk about is the other directions.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Well, do you want a motion tonight to discontinue them in the site collection?
With the add-on that we will study and redirect some of those funds.
And the add-on, but how are you going to communicate with people so you don't have...
Yes.
We will bring that communications plan back as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Then let's wait until the next meeting to bring that all in together.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Any other comments from SWAC members or the audience? This meeting is adjourned.